Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. It feels good today. I just had to, let's all just collectively breathe while we are recording this. We had the inauguration today, so it's a new day. Yes, it is, as Xavier said on Twitter. So we'll be talking about that to open up the show today. But in terms of combat sports, we have boxing to talk about. Reports of Canelo's next fight. We have a Fulton versus Leo card to preview as well. Then we're going to recap the two UFC shows from this past week and preview UFC 257 featuring Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. So tons of combat sports to talk about as well. Dre, you've been a busy man today, but I'm sure you took some time out to, one, either see Trump get his ass out of the White House, or two, see some of the inauguration and see a new regime come in to the White House.
Yeah, I watched. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. There was a part of me that was like, man, I hope he don't get killed. Like, I shouldn't have that kind of dread, but yeah. I did. I was just like, man, I hope he doesn't get shot. So I watched for that reason. I watched and I was like, man, I got to keep my eye on this fool. And, I mean, inauguration was it's an inauguration. Got a new president. Hooray. I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? It's just there's still a lot of work to be done. But fortunately, the Democrats have control of the House and the Senate. You got Biden. So there should be some changes. Unfortunately, people are very unrealistic in what the president can and can't do and how laws get passed and how things change. So some people can just have completely unrealistic expectations, like student loan debt disappearing. That shit's not going to happen. So
I only need that 10 G's, baby. Duh. Take away 10 G's. That leaves me with like 6 left.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, that shit ain't happening. Shouldn't get your hopes up.
10? I can do 10.
I've just watched a lot of people go back, you know, and talk about the Obama administration. It was like, yo, he ain't do nothing for black people, so don't get excited about Joe Biden. And that shit pisses me off. And here's why. Barack Obama gave us the Affordable Health Care Act, which was for black people, whether you want to admit it or not. It's not like Obama could just come out as a president and go, yo, I'm passing laws for black people. You can't do that. You're the president of the United States. But what you can do is you can have health care for all, which is somebody, you know, as African-Americans in America, you know, you're disproportionately you just don't have health care. There's so many black people who just don't have health care. For that alone was significant. And everything that Obama wanted to do, it got caught up in the House and the Senate. So I just hate when people say shit like that. So when you look at Biden and Kamala, they have these unrealistic expectations of what they can and can't do. The reality is almost anything is going to be better than what Trump has tried to do. Because let's be honest here. Trump gave y'all a bunch of false promises too. Where's that fucking wall? I ain't seen it. You seen it?
Not, I mean, allegedly there's 400 miles of this shit.
Yeah, okay.
I saw one video of someone just peacefully scaling the wall, dropping down the other side and booking it. So I don't think it works wherever this ball is.
Dude, presidents have, it's not like a monolith where the president can come in or dictator and just do whatever they want. They are a symbol. And then and Obama was a symbol of hope, and Trump was a symbol of hate, and Biden is and Kamala are symbols of hope. And hopefully they can make some kind of changes. But let's not go into this expecting police brutality to disappear and racism to be eradicated and classism and all this other. It's just, it doesn't work like that. But other things are going to happen. And if you pay attention, you'll see some changes. And if there are things that you don't like, you know, you can argue with your vote. You know, that's what voting is for. But it's good to see that Trump is gone. Somebody that can read is in office now. We got somebody that's not going to, you know, rally against white nationalists. But the thing I'm most concerned about is how much power is Trump going to have out of office. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's talking about this Patriot Party, which is funny because they had something very similar in the 60s and 70s, which is very reminiscent of Antifa, but whatever. But
he's taking it back.
Yeah, but that's what he's going to do. He's no longer the president, which means he can be as unruly as he wants to be. So there are still going to be people that are energized by Trump. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to, you know, change laws, but that's not what they were here for in the first place. They're here to just start shit. And the racists are still going to rally. They're still going to hate Biden. We'll see what happens. That's my biggest concern. But, yo, just I'm happy to see that his ass is gone. You know, anybody listening to this show, I didn't think it was going to happen. Fortunately, the COVID pandemic, that was the tipping point. It was a wrap.
Yeah, there was no coming back from that one.
Nah, I couldn't have predicted that one. But that's what got us over the hump. And even still, even though, you know, people say that Trump lost by a blowout, still way too many people voted for his dumb ass.
Way too close. Considering, way too close. But you look at it and listen, you ask what's going to happen. I mean, the racists are now going back into their shells and just awaiting for the next time when it's okay to be racist.
I don't think they're going back in their shells. I think.
Oh, my entire Facebook with people like full on Trumpsters are now saying, well, we have to be united. And okay, you know what? We do have a new regime. So let's make sure that we're just kind to everyone and lead with kindness and blah, blah. What? Because is that what happened the past 4 years? Not that I'm saying that you got to continue on the path and now it's like, fuck you guys. I mean, I'm not fucking with y'all. Like, we just not going to talk. But I won't openly be an asshole in your entire comment section as though you were to me and everyone else. So it's going to be less brash, but now they're calling for peaceful and, oh, yeah, let's not make it about that. It's about unity. When you're just going to go be racist off your keyboard now until it's cool again to be racist on the keyboard.
Yeah, I think they're still going to be out wilding. I don't think nothing's really going to change in that sense. I mean,
unless Trump comes out and, like you said, like, unless he ends up with the number one show on the ONN network or some wild shit like that, or he gets a weekly spot on Fox News where they just let him, you know, get his shit in, wrestling term wise. You know, unless he does that, I don't know if there's a platform for that negativity anymore. I think they're going to go back into hiding.
There definitely is. I mean, they were created because of Obama. I mean, because of Obama. Like the birther movement, the Tea Party movement, like all those things came from Obama. They were in direct response. Trump was a direct response to Obama. So with Biden in office and them still feeling energized, they're not going to go away. They're going to still have their shows and their bullshit. It's going to be there. It's just they don't have the man in the Oval Office to push that narrative. But they're still going to do it on their own. You think Jason Whitlock's disappearing? You think Candace Owens is going somewhere? Think nah. Tammy Lauren's going anywhere?
Nah, they're still cashing out, probably. I guess there is an audience.
Yeah, Outkick's still popping. It ain't going nowhere. Clay Travis is still doing his thing. They don't give a fuck. They don't care. You think Dana White's going to stop? Look, Dana White, which we'll talk about in a minute, I sat here and thought, I was like, yo, there is no reason why there should have been a UFC card in the middle of the inauguration.
No.
If Trump won, do you think this card would have happened right now? No. Dana would have been at the White House celebrating.
Yeah.
The shit is still going to be there. Just because the election is over and we have a new president doesn't mean things are necessarily going to change. It's a symbol of change, but watch your back. I'll say that much. Watch your back and shit's still going to pop off.
What's the defining moment of this Trump regime? Like 4 years. And I'm assuming it's going to be a negative moment. But what's like the defining moment? Like what's the thing that sticks out in your head?
God damn. I don't know.
Was it just 2 weeks ago?
I mean, yeah. The storming of the Capitol building was that. I mean, that was absurd. I ain't never seen no shit like that. But between that, like how he handled the tornadoes in Puerto Rico by shooting jump shots with paper towels, his entire handling of COVID, again, it was the defining moment because that wasn't a race thing anymore. That was just fucking gross negligence. But you can just run down the list of the things that he's done. So I don't think there's any one singular defining moment, even though it's the storming of the Capitol building, because that's my recency bias in effect, saying like, yo, that was the most absurd thing he's done. But it's been pretty much everything. I don't think there's been like two months. Nah, fuck that. I don't think a month has passed where we didn't go, God, what is he doing?
Yeah, especially this last year. Once COVID hit and he had like a lot of time, and people had a lot of time, he did some dumb shit.
Yeah. I'm glad it's somewhat over. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I feel like COVID's the sticking point. With getting people $1,200 for 9 months is probably the worst thing. And then the last month not doing anything. Yeah. And in fact, not acting like it exists. Like there was not a second spike. It was all the election is rigged.
Listen,
like he never mentioned COVID.
My man was calling it the Kung Flu. Like he
still calls it the China flu.
Exactly. So it's just, again, man, it's ridiculous. Like there's good people on both sides. Listen, man, we had a pandemic and we had racial unrest in this country at the same damn time. That's fucking nuts. That's insane. You're not supposed to have both of them at the same time. You had them at the same time. You had a pandemic and protests at the same time. That's insane. The Trump administration is absurd. It almost makes you forget, like people like Mike Pence and, you know, like they're horrible people too. But Trump was so bad, he made you forget how bad like George W. Bush was. It makes you forget how bad all these other people are. They're still here. They ain't going nowhere. They gonna be fighting. So be careful. Keep your guard up. Protect your neck.
Nah, definitely. That brings us to Trump and his pardon list. So this shit came down to like the last hour, middle of the night. But the list was released. Lil Wayne and Kodak Black get pardons from Trump. One, I'm not sure if it matters for Kodak Black. He might be right back in like 6 months.
Yes.
Lil Wayne, though. We talked about it when he went and talked to Trump. We talked about it on this show. We highlighted the importance of not looking at Lil Wayne as any type of savior or, you know, like role model in hip hop. But it comes down to the point of he did a direct deal, it seems like, for his freedom. I want to say at least it's a little better than what Kanye did. Am I going too easy on Lil Wayne?
Yes.
At least he finessed the finesser.
Fuck Lil Wayne. Come on, man. Fuck.
He got one over on him.
Fuck maybe. Lil Wayne. Listen, maybe. Man.
I don't know.
Lil Wayne don't give a damn about you.
No.
He don't give a damn about me.
He don't give a damn about black folk.
He don't give a damn about black people. He cares about Lil Wayne. And the fact that he gets pardoned. Now, listen, I had some friends that were like, this is cool, you know, he's partying. Fuck him. Like, for real. Like, yeah, Yeah, he can rap. But come on, man. You know, like, Mumia Abu-Jamal still in jail on death row. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Assata Shakur still can't come home. Like, if political prisoners were getting pardoned, cool. But that wasn't going to happen. This is like, this was about creating a relationship with people who don't really fuck with us. Lil Wayne don't really fuck with us like that. So if Trump said, yo, I'm having a Patriots party event and I need you to rap and get your friends involved, you and Kanye, do you think, how many idiots do you think would follow those two?
A good amount of idiots, yeah. Believe it or not.
And Wayne doesn't care. He don't give a shit about none of this. He don't care about Black Lives Matter. He don't care about the Democratic Party. He don't care about what's right and wrong. He cares about his bottom line, which a lot of people vote for their money. And Trump is all about his money. So this is like, anybody, I can't celebrate this. I know what this is. You know what I'm saying? Kodak Black? Really? Man's about to go to jail for, you know, the whole video with my, like, come on, man. What the impression that he's leaving, he's trying to get ingratiated with a certain community that didn't really fuck with him. So he'd rather get to their fans. Kanye, like, fans of rap music didn't mess with Trump. Fans of Kanye, if Kanye says I mess with Trump, then you saw a certain segment of rap fans going, Trump may not be all that bad. And that's absurd. Mm. So that's the same thing, man. So, yeah, seeing that list, it's like, come on, man. Come on. It's ridiculous.
No Joe Exotic.
Yo, worse than almost anything else, he's gay. Like, Trump was like, nah, I'm good.
No, yeah, Trump was like, okay, a white guy wants to get out. They're like, yeah, he's gay, but I'm like, eh.
Yeah, I'm, well then. I'm straight. Like, he's like, I'm straight, literally, and just left him there.
Guy hired a limo. It's cold-blooded.
Oh, well, too bad for you. Carol Baskins is like, phew.
She like, yo, look, if this guy gets out, I'm a rap. So yeah. She's partying today. She is excited. But that brings us to today, the inauguration. Listen, highlight. And I understand, new regime, everyone, it was great. The highlight of today, Michelle Obama was fine. And I'm not even like a huge Michelle Obama stan, but she crushed it today. Shout out to everyone making the memes saying she looked like Magneto, though. That shit had me in tears. But she stepped out the hair with the curls, and it's such a stark difference from when Trump, and they showed up for the Trump inauguration. What, Trump was 4 years ago, obviously. When they showed up for that, and she was just like, I don't want to be here. Like, her whole face, she just had the ponytail and like the little bun up top. She was like, yo, I'm not here for this shit. Today, she showed out. Like, it was homecoming.
Yeah.
Stepping out. And Obama was just salt and pepper haired up. He had the waves going. The dark Caesar. Can't tell them nothing.
Listen.
But yeah, Michelle Obama stole the show.
Yeah. I mean, listen. Seeing Kamala and Michelle, and then thinking about black women and how maligned they've been in this country and disrespected. And black women really saved the country. And we got to give them more credit. You know what I'm saying? And so when you see Michelle Obama, you know, looking regal, right? Like, her and Barack. Like, it's so crazy. When you look at Barack and Michelle, and then you look at Donald and Melania, like, ugh. You look at Barack and Michelle, it's like swag. Like, that's relatable. Like, I went back and watched the Desus and Mero with Obama. And I'm like, Trump couldn't do this shit. Obama's talking about hoops. Obama's cool. Michelle? She's cool. She's somebody that you would want your kids to be like. They're great speakers. So when you see Michelle step out, you're like, yeah, I can dig that. That's what I'm talking about. That's America. Yeah. Trump and Melania, that's also America. It's a fucked up part of America, though.
Michelle Obama made George W. Bush cool.
No, nobody's made George W. Bush cool.
Listen, she's made George W. Bush cool.
No.
It's okay. I'm not saying his presidency was cool. I'm saying she has contributed to him being cool in 2020. Their bromance? You can't hate on the bromance. That shit's funny. They're sneaking candy. All this shit. It's completely different. Not talking about his presidency. Talking about him being cool. And people looking at him like, oh, yeah, that's her best friend. They're besties. Like, whatever stupid fucking song is out right now. That's my bestie. Like, that shit. Like, that's them. She's made him. She is that cool. He is somewhat cool by proxy. So, yeah, Michelle crushed it today. I'm telling you, I felt a little cringe when my fellow Puerto Rican came up, though.
Who, Jennifer Lopez?
Let's get J-Lo. Loud.
She's so wet.
Oh, my God. I was like, J-Lo, don't go J-Lo. That's all I... One, I didn't know what she was singing. Then they were like, oh, she's singing like America the Beautiful. I was like, wait, you gave her like a real song to sing? I was like, oh, this shit's going to go real bad. Showing A-Rod stunting down there with all the... with all the politicians. You know, A-Rod thought he was like the man. So I was like, fuck, she's gonna mess this up. She started off, it was decent. Then the vocals hit, where she had to hit real notes, and then got a little rough. And then halfway through, she just went straight New Yorican. And I was just like, oh. I was like, these people don't know what the hell is going on. And then went back to singing poorly. So I was like, maybe that's not the right spot for J-Lo.
Yeah, I'm cool on J-Lo. Like, just...
Yeah, I get Lady Gaga. I get it.
Yeah, of
course. She can sing.
But look, man. J-Lo, when they announced J-Lo, like, my daughter was still sleeping. I was like, I'm going to go wake up my daughter. I ain't watching this shit. Like, I was not interested in seeing Jennifer Lopez do anything. And I know that people love her and talk about body goals. And she's not a bad actress. When it comes to this singing shit, let it go. Let it go. Like, let that shit go. Please.
Yeah, it ain't for her.
Nah, like, man.
Dancing, man. She got it. Acting, it's decent. Kinda. Might be kind. But listen, I let it rock. Singing? Nah. Yo, people had the jokes saying, are they pumping in Ashanti's vocals?
Right.
From the back. Like, Ashanti's vocals will make it any better?
No.
But that's where the bar was. The bar was set... very, very low. Shout out to Lady Gaga, who had the Dipset eagle on her chest, though.
Yeah.
That shit was gigantic. So it was a crazy event, start to finish. And then, of course, everything settles down. We're sworn in. There's a little speech. And like we talked about to open the show, people are excited. They're happy to see Biden and Harris. And... what it means going forward. And I mean, my god sister who lives in Orlando, she had the custom shirt for her daughter that says, like, my vice president looks like me.
Yeah.
Like, and what? Man, my god niece is like 4. So, like, little stuff like that where it's like, yo, that's... it's crazy. The same similar feeling, kind of how we got when Barack was elected. I was like, yo, that's just really fucking dope. We, you know, you had my president is black and all that stuff. Do you feel like, especially because of the climate now, that looking back, that this is going to be, and, you know, with Harris being vice president specifically, like a turning point?
I mean, that's still yet to be seen, man. Like, I can't call it. A turning point in terms of... I mean, there's two ways to look at it, right? Is it a turning point in terms of over the last 4 years? Absolutely. It'll be stark contrast. But is America really going to change its stripes in the next, you know, over the next 4 years? I don't know. I don't know what it means. And, you know, getting... I mean, just kind of think about this. Monumental changes in your lifetime of presidents. And, you know, for me... I was born when Reagan was still here, on his way out. And it was Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden. Things haven't changed all that much, right? It hasn't been that crazy of a difference. So turning point for America, I don't know. It just it's going to be better than it was for the past 4 years.
I mean, I would say, I can't say it hasn't changed all that. I mean, yo, having a black president was unfathomable.
That's symbolic, at one right? Point. Like, that's symbolic.
Yeah, even like symbolic, like, I get policies, you know, fairly the same. I think what's the biggest policy change in my lifetime? Gay marriage?
I mean, yeah, you could say that. I mean, between...
like, that's the biggest change I've had in my lifetime, directly affecting me and, like, my family members. Yeah, so okay. It's great to see, like... you know, my peers who are gay, able to marry and get rights and get insurance. And, like, that's the biggest policy change in my lifetime, probably.
Yeah, and that's huge. And, I mean, obviously, you know, depending on where you live, because laws are different, you know, things like three strikes, and there's a lot of things only enhance the prison industrial complex. So it depends. Marijuana being legal, that's in a lot of states, that's a big deal. But a lot of these things happen, and you know, when people say a turning point, you know, in order for there to be a true turning point, we'd have to really look at like classism. There's a lot of things we'd have to look at outside of just like, just law, like certain laws. It's a lot of shit. I mean, shit, you still got to deal with the Supreme Court. Like, there's a lot of shit this country still got to deal with. I mean, we're still a war country at the end of the day. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 4 years? Hopefully nothing. But you don't know. But America, it doesn't really change its stripes. It's just the rest of the world isn't laughing at us anymore. They're like, all right, well, they got a real president now. Yes. You know, that's cool. But we're still like the only first world country that has this ridiculous healthcare issue. And they worked really hard to fuck over Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act. Right? It's capitalism still what it is. Police brutality is not going to end. Things that affect us directly aren't necessarily going. It's not going to be.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Turning point. Things might start moving in the right direction, but you can't really get a whole lot done in 4 years. It takes at least 8, and you'd love to see it go 12 if you get another Dem in, but it just never happens. It always flips parties. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not pessimistic as I was with Trump.
That's not bad. Listen, for you to be optimistic is saying something. So that alone, we're on the right track. All right, so let's hit the break. When we come back, it's time to talk MMA. And we have tons of it to get to, tons of combat sports. So I enjoyed this talk. It was great talking politics, but we're leaving it here. You guys stay right there on the other side of the break. It's time for combat.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
At sports. All right, we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is a perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll be able to get your show pushed on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms.
And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for the episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
All right, just that quick, we are back. And I know I promised MMA, but we got to start with some boxing news. Dre, looks like Canelo is getting that extra fight in. Reports that Canelo is going to be fighting in Miami the end of February, and still leaves him enough time to hit camp and get ready for a big Cinco de Mayo fight. It's interesting, though, because we had never seen him fight in Florida. Last one was in Texas. Theoretically, Texas is still open for him to fight there. But this really feels like him branching out to another group of Hispanic fans.
I mean, yeah, it's a pandemic. Initially, they wanted him to fight in Mexico. But then that just got a little bit too complicated. So, he's going to fight. And the good thing is, I've seen people say, it's just kind of a stay busy fight against, Yildirim and, blah, blah, blah. And why can't he fight a real fight? No, it's a stay busy fight. So you can watch Canelo fight again. It's not like this fight is happening in May or September. It's a mandatory that he's getting out of the way. And so he can stay visible and busy. The best part about this whole shit is he's fighting on DAZN again. This is really sticking it to Oscar De La Hoya.
I mean, yeah. They just cut out the middleman.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it was. There were so many people just like, oh, man, DAZN. No, Canelo, he's a free agent, but he's still got a good relationship with Eddie Hearn. He's still got a pretty good relationship with DAZN. It was Oscar. And when I say, I'm not saying it was Golden Boy. Like, I'm telling you, it was Oscar. It was Oscar De La Hoya. And now, he ain't got to deal with that shit anymore. So have another fight on DAZN, which seems like, even though it hasn't been formally announced, but February 27th, super middleweight title defense.
Yep.
Avni Yildirim, and he'll stay active, and he'll fight in Florida, be some people there, and cool. So it's like he's doing what he wants to do. He's not going to be on the bench. He's going to get paid a buttload of money, and then he's going to fight again in May. I don't see him getting hurt again. I really look at this like how he handled Rocky Fielding.
Remember, yeah,
he fought definitely. Fielding in December at the Garden, which I was at, and clobbered him and was ready to get back in the ring by May. So it's the same
Garden.
Yeah, I was at the Garden.
Wow, crazy. For some reason, I thought that was in Vegas. But now you look at May and the possible venues. Easy to think Texas again. Who knows where Vegas is with letting in fans and everything by then. So you can't just pencil in the normal Vegas fight weekend. And then, also, if it's Billy Joe Saunders, you have to look at the UK if they're open.
Yeah, there's options.
I feel like Canelo's wanted to fight in the UK. Everyone now seems to want to fight in the UK. Like any fighter you talk to, they're like, I can't wait to go out and fight in the UK.
Because it's crazy. Like, they treat boxing like we treat, the Super Bowl. It's crazy. And plus, they can have fans. I mean, they have a hardcore base. I mean, truth be told, before this pandemic happens, and I guess I could talk about it now, the original plan for Canelo was to kind of go on a world tour. He wanted to fight in other markets. He really wanted to fight at Tokyo Dome. Really wanted to fight at Tokyo Dome. Then he wanted to fight at Wembley. He wanted to make his run. Like, fighting at the Garden was part of the plan. He wanted to expand his reach. So now, if he gets the opportunity again, yeah, of course, he would love to fight Billy Joe Saunders in the UK. I think he wanted to fight like Murata at Tokyo Dome. He's just trying to find somebody to fight, but he wants to crack those markets because he still remains boxing's biggest star. So we'll see who he fights in May. I think the lines are open. The cool thing about being a free agent is whoever gives me the most money, because everybody wants to fight me. It's not like Canelo's got to go chasing after a fight. It's not like Bob Arum offering Sean Porter $1 million to fight Terrence Crawford.
Not when Kell Brook just got two.
What is wrong with
Bob? How crazy is that?
He's nuts.
Like, Kell Brook, you just paid $2 million during a pandemic to come in and take a smooth ass whooping. You can't offer Sean one. And I get it. It's guaranteed. He's trying to say other stuff is built in, but still, that shit's laughable.
It's ridiculous. Sean Porter's a much better fighter than Kell Brook. And that's a fight that people actually want to see.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it's ridiculous.
That's really the only fight to make at this moment for Terrence Crawford.
That's it.
Bob has to be real confident that he has Manny in the bag.
I don't think he is. I mean, he can't be. He's not, yeah, he's like, he doesn't advise Manny, none of that shit. Manny wants to fight Conor McGregor.
No, I think that's going to happen, but I think that might be like a fall type thing. So, like, you got to be real confident that all your years of, you know, being an advisor for Manny and the relationship being there and letting him go when you did and letting him make money and whatever, you got to be real confident that Manny's still like, I really like you, Bob, so I'll fight your fighter instead of anyone else.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Ain't that cool.
It ain't that cool. We'll see. He's banking on something. Because if not, there's no one left for Crawford to fight.
Yeah.
No one. Unless you make him sit out the year. There's no one left.
Yeah, so I mean, ultimately, like going back to Canelo, he holds all the cards. So after he wins this fight, because it'd be the greatest upset in boxing history, I think, if he lost, you know, he's got Caleb Plant. You know, I mean, he's got options for who he fights in May. He can fight anybody. So we'll see. He's in the best position right now. He could fight Triple G if he wanted to. He could force.
I was about to say, what's the chances for Triple G?
Again, I just feel like because Triple G doesn't have a title, and Canelo's after the titles, it's like, what's the point? But money does still talk. There could be a lot of money being thrown around, and let's just say, hypothetically speaking, Caleb Plant, Billy Joe Saunders play hardball financially, right? And the Golovkin fight, it's a little easier to make. Even though Billy Joe Saunders is the easiest fight to make, because Eddie Hearn handles that, yep. But Eddie Hearn's also handling Triple G now, so it really depends on.
See, it's tough not having that as an exclusive pay per view.
Yeah, I mean, but that's as you've noticed, the new deal with DAZN is you put it on pay per view, and if you buy it on pay per view, you get like 3 months of DAZN free, or you just get DAZN and then you get the fight for fucking $12. But people are crazy and they'll spend $60-$70 to watch it.
Which
on
you
pay-per-view.
Can't even. Yeah, that's still losing so much money out on the Golovkin rematch, or excuse me, trilogy. Even that, because there's still so many people who have DAZN or will just buy DAZN by, you know, hearsay, word of mouth. So you're still losing, what, $60 per eyeball.
Yeah, it's not that. I mean, it's...
It's a shit ton.
It's a lot of money, but...
When you're doing 2 million buys.
But that fight ain't going to do 2 million.
Their other fights did what, 1.4, 1.6?
Yeah, but I don't think the interest in Triple G Canelo is the same as it was back then. The appetite's not there like it used to be. We still want to see it, but...
I think Canelo got bigger, so maybe Triple G hasn't gotten, you know, increased his profile, but I think Canelo's profile has grown.
Canelo's profile has grown, but the appetite for the Golovkin fight isn't what it was like 2 years ago. Golovkin's recent performances have kind of soured fans on that fight. There's a lot of people that think Canelo's just going to go in there and knock him out. It's not like it was before.
But you can really sell Golovkin winning those first two fights.
You can, but the problem is you look at the fight with Derevchenko, and you look at the fact that this fight would have to happen at 68, which Triple G has never fought before.
Yep.
It changes the dynamic completely. And the fact that Triple G
can't market that, though. That's the only thing. I know this. You know this. Hardcore fans know this. But you don't market that. You show them slugging, and you show a couple of mainstream people saying, you know what? Triple G kind of won the first fight and may have won the second.
Yeah.
And Canelo is gifted. You can drum up interest.
I mean, it's still a big fight, right? I just don't think it's a $2 million pay-per-view selling fight now. I think it's like 1.5. So,
it's so hard to know because Canelo hasn't been on true pay-per-view in so long.
Yeah. And
we don't know how much his brand has grown.
Right. And then on top of that, because, you know, it's the DAZN subscription-based service, there's the way that it's baked in now. It's like not only do you get a guarantee, you do get a pay-per-view upside. So it's like the guarantees are a little bit bigger at DAZN because the fight's on the subscription service. So it's complicated because, you know, nobody's really doing numbers like that right now. You know, it's not like UFC is completely transparent about the numbers.
Only Tyson. No, I'm just kidding.
So it's like you don't really know what anybody's doing, and it's hard to gauge what can be done, especially in the midst of a pandemic. So it's like who's really doing what? And it's just like the movie theaters, right? Like the movie theaters are pissed off because the movies are going straight to HBO Max. Right? But there's an upside because these movies want to be seen. And motherfuckers ain't going to the theater. You know, so that's why they go straight to the. I mean, they pay a hefty licensing fee to carry these movies, just like the Zone's going to pay a hefty licensing fee to carry this fight, and these fighters are going to get paid. So, pay per view does guarantee the additional money for these purses, and that's why some of these fighters can control so much. But when pay per views ain't what they used to be, you might leave a little bit of money on the table. But then, then the other thing you got to think about is this.
People share passwords to the Zone. Like,
people steal pay-per-views.
Yeah, that's also true.
It's like nobody's like.
It's
really
easier to share a password than it is to bootleg some shit.
Yeah, it's just. But seriously though, how many? Come on, you're talking to me. How many people do you know buy pay-per-views?
We're dwindling. I know people who buy UFC pay-per-views still. Like, honest to God, buy 3 a year, 4 a year. Which is, you know, somewhat surprising sometimes. I don't know many people who really save that money to the side to buy boxing pay-per-views.
People ain't buying shit like that.
Pre-pandemic, I knew more people who would save money and just go to the fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Buy the pay-per-view.
So to put it into more perspective, it's like, yeah, pay-per-views aren't what they were, and pirating is a really big deal. And then on the flip side of that is, let's just say Canelo fights Billy Joe Saunders. That shit is on pay-per-view with Sky Sports. That shit is pay-per-view in another country where tons of people are going to buy the fight.
$15. Yeah, I don't know how they get away with this.
Dude,
pounds.
Because there's huge gates. Like Anthony Joshua, for instance. And the motherfucker sells 80,000 seats at Wembley. The man makes 70 million. Like he made like 70 million to fight. It's insane. Pay-per-view helps. But boxing's such a big sport there. They don't have to just rely on live gate. We look at the live gate in Vegas. How many of those damn tickets are comped?
Oh, so many. We know this.
Yeah, so I'm saying boxing is different. And, you know, these hefty purses that fighters want, the only way to guarantee that through pay-per-view. But the hard thing about pay-per-view is it limits your visibility. And when it limits your visibility, it's hard for you to sell the next show if nobody sees your ass. So if you're stuck on pay-per-view, which stuck is a relative term, but if you're on pay-per-view multiple times and people are like, I ain't paying for that shit. Like if you're a Charlo and you go exclusively pay-per-view, you're limiting your audience.
Yeah, but if you're Gervonta, you're fine because your highlights are going to go viral on social.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. So theoretically, 30 million people are going to see your knockout of Leo Santa Cruz, which I'm almost positive 30 million people saw that. Did they all buy the fight? Obviously not. But you go from, 400,000 sold to maybe 600,000 the next time. 200,000 boost off of straight social media replays.
Yeah, then on the flip side of that is let's just say he turns into Adrian Broner. Adrian Broner ain't selling no goddamn pay-per-views.
He's a hell of a B-side.
He's an exceptional B-side. He doesn't win fights. Like, but it's a whole...
No,
it's a completely different
thing. Different when you're nerfing people. You know, like, it's different when your knockouts and your highlights are able to keep you in circulation. That's all I'm saying. Like, Broner doesn't have those to keep him in circulation to sell anything. He's run out of those. I can't give you the last Broner highlight. He barely beat Paulie Malignaggi. When was the last time he knocked someone out?
He hasn't. Like, Broner has been whack for years, but his antics...
And he's coming back February 13th.
Yes. His antics keep him relevant. But all this to say, boxing pay-per-views don't do what they do. And if you're able to... You want to be seen so you can sell a live gate, and then you can get endorsements and sponsorships, whatever the fuck it is, how else you get paid. But if you stay behind a paywall, when people are pirating shit, not only are you limiting your visibility, you're not really getting paid because everybody's bootlegging your shit anyway. So it's risky. So if you can get a guaranteed purse to be on a subscription service, or if you can get a guaranteed purse to be on network television, it might be advantageous to take that opportunity. So when you look at Canelo versus Triple G, is it a big fight? Absolutely. Are they going to miss out on a few pay-per-views they put it on the Zone? Sure. But old people still going to buy pay-per-views because they ain't got time for that shit. They are not trying to subscribe to the Zone. They're like, yo, just click the shit and get me the fight.
Yeah. Even though my grandma's a wizard on the Zone app now and the ESPN Plus.
Your grandma's an outlier.
She really is. It took a long time. I ain't gonna lie to you. It took years to get her comfortable with the Zone app, but now she can find all the fights, which is great. No, we have, and talking about fights, we have a fight this weekend, Showtime. Angelo Leo, Stephen Fulton Jr. headlining it. But a fight on the undercard is just as interesting. We have Rolando Romero, Roly, versus Justin Paldo. It's a rematch.
Yes.
And Romero, and according to a lot of people, was gifted this interim belt. He's, you know, trains with Mayweather out of Mayweather gym and all that stuff. And talks a lot of shit, which is cool. But he kind of came out a couple months ago and laid an egg, and it was a stinker. And they gave him that card.
Yes, they did.
So this time, he really has to prove it.
Yeah, he does. I don't think he's the goods. I think he's...
Which is crazy. Like, he talks shit to, like, really good fighters. I mean, he's in that really good young class of fighters, you know, like, age bracket. Not saying his skill level determines that, but age bracket-wise, he's mixed in with him. So he's sparred the Devin Haney's, the... you know, Gervonta Davis. There's allegedly film of him beating the shit out of Ryan Garcia, which I've never seen.
You know, sparring is interesting because it really don't mean all that much. I've seen guys sparring beat the brakes off people. Like I said, Errol Spence was like phenomenal to watch sparring. He just beat the shit out of people because nobody knew who
Gervonta
he was.
Beats the hell out of people.
Yeah, like when you come into a gym to get in work, you know, like, yes, Floyd got busted open by Errol Spence sparring, but it's not like Floyd couldn't beat Errol. Floyd was working on things heading into that fight, so it's like when people say things like "I whooped your ass in sparring," so like because you still got to fight. So I think Romero's in a Rolly's he's a lot of talk. He's gonna have to show me something because yes, he laid an egg, and it's not one of those eggs where you go he laid an egg, but that's an outlier because he has great performances elsewhere. No, he kind of lays eggs. So, he's an okay fighter, but we'll see. Maybe he got better. He's got some shit to prove.
Yeah. They didn't give him a lot of time to get better. It's been like 3 months. So, he better have gotten a lot better a lot faster than I anticipate. And then, yeah, main event, Angelo Leo, Stephen Fulton Jr. I expect Fulton to win this fight, but I don't think it's going to be easy. WBO belt on the line. I believe this is the belt that was vacated, a couple months ago?
Yeah.
I think. So, you look at this, it's like, all right, cool, vacant belt, but two guys who are definitely worthy of being champions. I think Fulton really has the platform. There hasn't been boxing, one fight since Canelo? And that was Ryan Garcia? So, I mean, you're really kicking off this year's boxing. Ryan Garcia still felt so close to last year. So it's like a fresh slate for you. You really got to go out there and show out. And I think Fulton Jr. could do that. And 122 is such a weird division now. Like, I feel like it's a division that's wide-ass open.
So, two things. One, let's be clear. Nobody's watching this fight. I mean, let's be honest. Everybody's watching.
What else are we doing?
Connor.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's watching this fight. Hardcores, yes. But this is not a fight on Saturday night where people are like, I just came across it. If you watch combat sports, Connor's event watch. He's appointment viewing. That's what people are watching. This fight, though, is a very good fight between two fighters who are almost identical in just about every facet. Their knockout ratio, their height, their reach. Except that Leo's a pressure fighter and Fulton is more of a guy who reacts. And I think the bigger problem with Stephen Fulton, and it's not even a real issue, is he's a counterpuncher who waits for you to make a mistake to capitalize. Angelo Leo's a guy who's just going to come at you, kind of a Leo Santa Cruz type, who is his defense is his offense. And because of his pressure, he could just win rounds if Fulton waits too long to get off. Because what Fulton does, he's not really a trap layer, like a Floyd Mayweather, for instance. He's a guy who uses his natural instinct to figure things out. And sometimes it could backfire because when you use your natural instincts, it means that you're less active. And when you're less active, the guy who is more active can rack up rounds. And then before you know it, you're entering the eighth round down 6-1, and you're like, what the fuck happened? But I think Fulton knows this, and he knows Leo's going to come to fight early, and he knows he's going to pressure him because that's the only way that Angelo Leo can fight. There won't be a knockout. I would be surprised if somebody got knocked out in this fight. But I really like Stephen Fulton. I think he's got a lot more room to grow. I think guys who are very intellectual in the ring have a longer lifespan than guys who just go balls to the wall and fight because it only can get you so far. And I think Fulton will take advantage, and I think he'll squeeze out a decision. It might be a split, but I'm sure we'll get like 116, 112 cards.
Damn, for his sake, he better hope for a knockout, though.
He's not getting
it. Because, again,
these guys aren't knockout guys. They're small. They're not one-punch guys.
Steal the headlines, like you mentioned.
They're
not. No, I mean, not like flat-out cold knockout, but like, you know, like a stoppage.
I would like, again, I'd be surprised. They're both durable. Fulton's, I think, is more durable than Leo, but Leo fights in a manner where you're going to have to catch him.
He's used to throwing him. Yeah, yeah.
You're going to have to catch him. So it'll be good. I'll have one eye on this fight, obviously. While I'm watching the UFC card, and I'll probably end up having to go back to watch this fight again because I'm picking Fulton, but I'm very curious how he looks, because at 122 it's wide open for him to really make a name for himself, and I'd like to see him turn into great performers.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you who's the best at 122 right now. Like, it's now that Navarrete moved up. Like, who is, I mean, Neary is cool.
Neary can punch.
Brandon Figueroa's, he can.
Yeah.
Figueroa,
he gets hit all right. Too much. He gets hit way too much.
Yeah. I forgot who the other champion is. Someone unified the titles. But, I mean, I don't think I've seen him fight all year. I'll remember it, and I'll look it up. Oh, Akhmadiliev.
And Akhmadiliev is a problem. He doesn't have a lot of fights. But
he's a lot like Loma when he hit the scene.
Yeah, well, he beat Daniel Roman in Miami last year. I was at the fight. Shocked a lot of people. But
oh, so it has been a year. Yep, yeah. It's been a full year.
It's been a full year since we've seen him fight. And, yeah, I mean, you still have Ray Vargas. It's a division that is open, is wide open for the taking, and Ray Vargas is the man right now. He's the best fighter in the division, but it's open, man. Fulton's a guy who could take over, but if Angelo Leo does his thing, hey,
you think Vargas is the best fighter in the division
right now? Yeah, right now he's probably the best in the division. He's undefeated. He's 34-0. Akhmadiliev is relatively new to the scene. Daniel Roman doesn't turn in bad performances. Brandon Figueroa gets hit too much. Who am I missing? Fulton's is there, but these two guys, him and Leo, they have something to prove. So, Iwasawa is in there as well.
I would love to see NOI move up.
Yeah, he's going to have to at some point. It's going to have to happen. I mean, when you display that kind of level.
There's a lot of people to fight. 118 if he wants to stay.
There are, which is true, but I think at a certain point, maybe, you know, he could run into the Chocolatito problem, where he's really good in a lot of people's pound for pound list, but at some point you go, well, shit, man, you need to fight a name that we can see, right? Like, we all know Donaire, but the rest of that division, they ain't jumping off of the page at anybody. And then that's when you take those risks and end up losing. So, we'll see.
Seems like he's trying to take a risk, but it's a risk with a smaller fighter and fighting Ioka.
Yeah, that's a tough fight.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Inoue is kind of over. I'm surprised Ioka won the last fight, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, I get it. And if you're going to put it in Japan, like, we just saw Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome have plenty of fans. You're trying to make money. That's a pretty damn good fight.
Oh,
for a gate. So, but yeah, I would like to see him go up and dare to be great on that one. Let's switch gears then. Let's get into the UFC, and we'll give the end of the show to Conor because it's Conor McGregor. So we'll use this time to talk about the two fights that just happened over the past week, starting with UFC on ABC. And I like the presentation. I hope this becomes a thing, like permanently, because I thought it came off well. I thought it had a nice amount of chatter, like on social media and everything. And I thought a lot of eyes were on it being on national television. In fact, I hope Top Rank Swagger Jack's the model and tries to do at least two fights on ABC in the coming year.
Yeah, I mean, and they couldn't ask for a better card. It was a card that the prelims were all decisions. Then you hit the main card, and before the co-main event, it was all B-sides winning by first round knockout. It was all the underdogs, which was nuts. You had the guy, Joaquin Buckley, who has arguably one of the greatest knockouts ever, got flatlined. Like,
kicked right to the dome piece.
Yeah, it's, dude, how things change. You go from a guy who is on the verge for a lot of people of stardom after that viral-ass knockout, now you're somebody else's highlight. And going back to work at CVS, cruel world.
I was about to say, you're CVS manager.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, the card couldn't have been a better card for ABC. They could have had, like, five decisions, and it would have been miserable. But I think it whet the appetite for a lot of fans. So I'm interested in seeing when the next card is going to be and who they end up putting on there, because it's a lot of visibility. Everybody was talking about Max Holloway, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, I don't know if Soriano's, you know, the underdog in that one.
Which one?
In the opener of the main card, Soriano.
Yeah, he was the underdog.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, he mollywopped him.
Yeah, it was all Blue Corner. It was all underdogs. Blue Corner was won every fight until the co-main event. All crazy. Underdogs.
Gigi Liang, G beat Ponzinibbio, which was odd. You know, granted, it's 2.5 years off.
Yeah.
But knocked his ass out, so we didn't see that coming. And then the co-main, the fight that I thought would be the most intriguing and definitely wouldn't go to the judges, ends up going to the judges. Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown. It was cool. I think it would have been more violence if it would have happened 6-7 years ago.
10. Give me 10 years ago.
10 years ago?
Yeah.
2011?
Yeah.
Nah, I mean,
okay. Come on. This was Carlos Condit.
2014 Carlos Condit. The Robbie Lawler versus Carlos Condit. Like,
I mean, shit. Carlos Condit back then, you know, he almost stopped GSP. Got him with a head
GSP.
Kick. Look, man, almost 10 years ago. But this fight happened in 2021. It is what it is. It was entertaining. It was, I don't call them geriatric because they're not that old. But they both have seen better days. So, fight that happened. Like, when people hear that fight, if you're a Laps fan and you say, Carlos Condit fought Matt Brown, the first thing is, like, they haven't fought already? It's almost absurd they haven't fought. But
second thing is, they're still fighting?
Exactly. Oh, word? Carlos Condit's still fighting? Yeah, still here.
Like, all right, I'll watch that. Okay fight in the co-main. And then we get to the main event. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. And Max usually starts off slow. But from the opening bell, it was on. Max was on his ass, and it was just... it was two different levels of fighters. And then we go through the fight, and Max extends the lead. And it felt like every round he had Calvin in trouble. Every single round. And then, of course, we get to, like, the fourth round, and Max starts dancing on him, and Calvin can't hit him at all. We get to the fifth round, and Max is talking shit. He's talking to DC at the table, saying, I'm the best boxer, and does the craziest, like... just bobbing weave I've ever seen. And then just no look, right hand, bow, hits Calvin in the face. Like, wild. And Max was just on a different level that night. Calvin coming to the fight saying that he was a varsity boxer and Max was like a freshman. Probably should not say that type of shit. Don't want to give a man ammo.
No, not at all.
Great fight. Should have been stopped. That's my first question to you.
Yes. So there's two things. One, if you learn anything about watching Max Holloway fight, the only way you can beat him is by having incredible power or be able to threaten with a takedown. If you try to stand there and strike with him, you're going to lose. It's inevitable. You can't do it. Because what Max Holloway does, that few fighters can do, he fights like an avalanche. It starts early, and then the snowball gets bigger and bigger. And bigger, and then before you know it, you're in the fifth round going, fuck, when does it stop? Because it doesn't stop. He's just getting revved up. You go back to the Ricardo Lamas fight. You go back to how he overwhelmed Jose Aldo. You look what he did to Anthony Pettis. It's the same thing. He's not a big puncher. Yeah, he's not a big puncher.
T-City was out for, what, 2 years after?
Yeah, he's not a big puncher, which it makes it problematic. Like, when we talk about, like, concussion protocol and boxing and CTE, it's not the one-punch knockouts. It's the repeated blows of the head. And that's what Max Holloway does. He should be called CTE because that's what he's doing to these guys by hitting them with several hundred punches in a fight. It's incredible. Which Calvin Kattar is a really good boxer, but he couldn't handle that volume. That volume was, it's impossible to deal with. You can't match it. And if you don't have the power to hurt Max Holloway, if you're not Dustin Poirier, who was clearly bigger than Max going into that fight, you can't get him off of you. You have to hurt that man badly or threaten with a takedown, which was Alexander Volkanovski, which is a testament to really how good Volkanovski is.
Yes, even though I still think Max won the last fight.
Which is fine. He, you know, if you looked at the fight in totality, it can go either way because Volkanovski got dropped twice. But then you look at the other three rounds, you look at volume, and you look at what Volkanovski did with the takedowns. Either way, the fact that Volkanovski was able to hang with Max in two fights, win or lose, is a testament to how good he is. Because the gap between Max and the rest of that division right now is what? Like, I mean, look what he did to Brian Ortega. And then we just saw what Brian Ortega did against the Korean Zombie.
Yep.
It's insane. He's
and Ortega's in the title fight coming up.
Oh, absolutely.
And he got mollywhopped by Max.
Yeah, but so, the thing is,
yeah, it's one of those things.
Truthfully, Ortega's a completely, like that Korean Zombie fight, he was a complete, I've never seen that. Ball head Ortega, C-level Kane, put them all together, TRT Vitor, like they are all in the same boat now. Because that version of Ortega, we had never seen that guy. That was a frightening guy. But Max Holloway, obviously, should get the next title fight. I know people are calling for him to go to lightweight. But lightweight's kind of crowded right now. And his last experience at lightweight, he got busted up pretty bad by Dustin Poirier. So I would still like him to get another crack at that title at featherweight before making that decision. He's not a big puncher.
No, I agree. No, there's fights for him down there still. It's not as competitive as people may want. But, you know, you let someone else have a shot at the title, and then, you know, Max is probably stay busy one more fight, and then he's the next man up.
Yeah.
So it's incredible performance. And then they had the Wednesday card during the inauguration, like you said, started at 9 a.m. Eastern. Wild time to start a card. But it was fun waking up to MMA. And then, I mean, the fights were okay. Roxanne Modafferi lost the decision, which I was like, all right. But I wasn't overly impressed with either of them in that fight. It was a decision fest up until Ike Villanueva gets the stoppage. And, oh, earlier in the night, Habib's nephew?
Cousin.
Or cousin. Habib's cousin made his debut, which is cool because it's 9 years after the date where Habib made his debut and got a rear naked choke stoppage, just like Habib.
You know what? Before we talk about the rest of this card, can we talk about Dana White being the scorned girlfriend who has a closed-door meeting with Habib and comes out of that meeting to make an announcement on ABC? And the announcement goes something like this. I talked to him. He still don't want me. But, you know, he still wants me. I mean, I think I could talk him into it. You know, if I get my titties done, maybe he'll come back. He said maybe. So the door is open. Even though he said he don't want me no more and he broke up with me, he still wants me. And I think if I get my ass done, he'll come back. That's what that shit sounded like. Because Khabib basically said, no, I'm done. I told you I'm retired. And then Dana had to say, well, what if Conor looks amazing? And he's like, all right, if he looks spectacular, all right, I'll think about it. You know, you break up with a girl, it's like, yeah, maybe I'll call you. You ain't calling her.
Yeah.
That's what that shit sounded like. How desperate can you be? This is the same man that Dana White says, if you are thinking about retirement, you should leave the sport. Khabib didn't just think about it. He told your punk ass, I'm done.
I'm out.
And you were just like, no, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. And he's like, yes, I am. He came out to see his cousin fight. And you want, let's have a meeting, Khabib. I think I can make this work. Khabib's like, no, you can't. Give me a chance. He doesn't even want to fight Conor. Like, come on.
No, I don't think it's Conor by any means. Like, it'd have to be.
The only fight there is GSP.
I got to be some. Yeah, Mike. Or Michael Chandler has to look amazing.
No, that like, wouldn't get him out.
You got to give him something new.
It's GSP. And even then, because he made the promise to his mother after his dad died of COVID, even then that's a stretch. But the only fight that I think could get Khabib to come out of retirement is if you say, look, man, George St. Pierre is going to fight you. It's a legacy fight. What does Khabib gain by fighting Michael Chandler or Dan Hooker or even Charles Oliveira? Nothing.
Nah, nothing more. his legacy of beating the best is already solidified.
It's done. It's just GSP. That's it. It's the only name that I think Khabib, if you've known Khabib, if you ever talked to him, you bring up GSP to Khabib, and he's like, his eyebrows go up. I'll take that fight. He didn't like Conor. That's the only reason why he beat the shit out of him. But outside of that, now that his dad's gone and he's made that promise to his mother, ain't no lightweight going to get Khabib out of retirement.
No.
Dustin Poirier it's could, dude, Dustin Poirier could beat the shit out of Conor. Khabib's already beat him.
Yep. Ain't changing nothing.
Yeah, nothing at all. Anyway.
And then we had the main event of the Wednesday card, Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. I mean, it was five rounds of Michael Chiesa looking great and using his wrestling and ground skills to really put a stamp on that. So it's cool. I don't know where Chiesa goes next. He called out Colby Covington.
I'll take it.
But how you don't... Yeah, but you got to go full MAGA. The official death of MAGA, which is Masvidal versus Covington next.
Yeah, if for any reason that fight doesn't happen. You know, the extraordinary thing is Chiesa was the winner of the Ultimate Fighter 15 at lightweight. And from that point on, anybody that saw Chiesa in person, I've interviewed him a few times in person. You look at him and like, there's no fucking way you make 155 pounds. There's just no way.
Big as hell.
Like, how did you do this? And now that he's at 170, he's 4-0. He's looked pretty damn good. Beat Pettis, mm-hmm. beat Dos Anjos. And then he just kind of handled Neil Magny. He suffocated him. So, yeah, he's not exciting for like guys who like to watch striking. But at this division, this is a very strange division. Kamaru Usman's the champ. Going to fight Gilbert Burns on February 13th. Many people expect him to defend the title. After that, who's left?
I really want to see a Wonder Boy fight.
That's all that's really left.
Yeah.
Everybody else has kind of washed themselves out.
Great in the last fight. Yep. But I'd say Wonder Boy would probably be that next man up. Yeah, that's it. Unless you acquiesce to wild-ass McGregor dreams again.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that. Conor still yeah, so he's still got to win a fight. So.
Yeah, he got to win, but you never know what the hell happens. He necessarily doesn't even have to win. If the man said he wants to challenge for that belt and there's no one else, like that's Dana's going to say yes. So let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about Conor McGregor, UFC 257 coming up this weekend. So you guys stay right there. We'll be right back. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we're back and we're talking UFC 257 to wrap up the show. Decent card. It's all right. I'd say it's a better card than Conor's card last year versus Cerrone.
Sure.
But still, it's Conor heavy. So this week has also been Conor heavy. The man showed up in a yacht. Like, I'm not staying in the fighter hotel. Pulled up in his own yacht and just parked that shit next to the stadium.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like,
it's Conor.
Come on, that's the lore of Conor McGregor. He just keeps adding to the narrative. But also, on the negative side of fight week for Conor, a woman issued a civil suit in the sexual assault allegations, suing him for millions, and I think maybe her mother's in on the suit, separate suit, also suing him for damages. So it's one of those things where, as much as it always looks like Conor's rededicated himself and he's turned the corner, these things are always looming now.
It's part of being rich. For better or worse, because I'm not saying Conor didn't do it. I won't go that far. But the more money you get, the more exposure you get, you're going to get sued. It's just the way it is. But this kind of shit, different story. And it makes it complicated. And, you know, Dana White's going to have Connor's back. So we'll see what comes out of this. Civil suit, the whole sexual assault thing. It's the man's got two kids going on three. Better clean this shit up. Better have some better friends to keep you out of trouble.
Relax, enjoy your money.
Yeah.
Stop being a young knucklehead. You're not a young knucklehead anymore.
No.
So, yeah, just act your age, Mr. McGregor. Before this slips my mind, I'll say this on wax because I don't think I can really pull this off. But how amazing would it be if I could make a graphic and a poster for a Colby Covington fight versus Jorge Masvidal where it says MAGA powers explode? And it's the same MAGA powers explode poster.
That'd be pretty incredible.
Of Hogan. Yes, I really got to pitch this. I don't think they're going to go for it.
They're not.
But that's incredible. I might just create that for the timeline. Just throw that shit out there for free. Let it bubble up. So if you guys see that, you know where the hell it came from. But back to UFC 257. We then have, outside of McGregor and the shenanigans and everything of the fight week, which is actually, he's been respectful by Conor's standards.
He respects
Poirier.
He did the same thing with Donald Cerrone. They went there and beat the shit out of him.
That's also true. He looks to be in great shape. It looks like he's trained even harder for this fight than for the Cerrone fight. A little more focus. I don't know if it's COVID and just shutting shit down. You can't be a globetrotter. And he's been at home. He's been with his family. He's been training. His son's in the gym with him every day. He seems to really enjoy that. So it's been like a little bit of a change for McGregor heading into this fight. We'll give our prediction for the main fight here in a second. Let me go through some of the prelims or the undercard. So prelims have some decent fights that I'm looking forward to. Khalil Roundtree on the prelims. And Khalil, when you're looking at him, it's like he's shown glimpses, never really put it all together. And I feel like this is a fight where, for him, it's always knock someone out or get knocked out.
Yeah.
So, knocked out by Johnny Walker, somehow knocks out Sakai. You're like, cool. And then gets knocked out versus Kudalaba, and then comes back and beats Eric Anders. So, this fight is another one where he should probably win this. Get some momentum. Should be an entertaining fight. After that, Juliana Pena versus Sarah McMahon. Cool little fight. Pena was really good a couple years ago.
Yo, Pena's kind of fallen off. One, Sarah McMahon has like the best arms in all of women's MMA. Like, that girl's arms are incredible. Like, I want her arms. They're incredible.
She's 40.
I know.
I don't know how she stays in that shape.
She looks, I mean, when you see Sarah McMahon, she looks incredible. And obviously, you know,
was
being
her
world
first loss to Ronda?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look.
Yeah, her first loss was to Ronda.
Her first loss was to Ronda, then she struggled. Tate, Nunez, I think she lost to, like, Mary Renault. But Juliana Pena is just kind of like, she had that injury that put her on the shelf for, what, like 2.5 years? And she's just never been the same. And I think this is Sarah McMahon's fight to lose. This would have been a main card fight, like, 2 years ago. Now it's not. I think Sarah McMahon will probably win this fight. I think she'll out-wrestle her.
Yeah, I can't pick Pena to win again until I see it. Granted, it's a lot of time, right? You can get really healthy and get back to your groove during COVID pandemic times and all this stuff. But it's hard to capture that confidence again.
You know, here's the weird thing, right, with Pena is that she's lost to two people during her UFC run. And that is Valentina Shevchenko, who beats everybody.
Yep.
And Jermaine Durandamy. Now, when I say that, you're just like, well, then how can you pick Sarah McMahon to win? What bothers me about the Durandamy loss is she got submitted by Jermaine Durandamy.
And that's her game. That's your game.
That's like, how does this happen? You're not supposed to get submitted by Jermaine Durandamy, a kickboxer, who I don't think has ever submitted anybody with a guillotine. Makes me question what's going on. So that's kind of why I'm picking Sarah McMahon. I think her wrestling is better, and I think she can just kind of smother. It's not like Juliana Pena is a great striker. And we kind of know what we're getting out of Sarah McMahon. It's going to be a heavy grappling wrestling type match.
think she should win this.
You might have talked me into taking Juliana Pena, though. Because that's true. Those are two pretty good losses.
They are. It's just the submission. When I remember watching that fight. I was like, are you serious? I think the odds for Jermaine Duran to me to win by submission was like a plus like 20,000. Something absurd. People were cleaning up. She didn't submit anybody. She's a kickboxer. That was stupid.
Yeah, that's wild. I like the next fight a lot, too. Brad Tavares versus Antonio Carlos Jr.
That is a really good
fight. They're going to throw hands. Yeah, like, they're going to throw hands.
Yeah,
I think Carlos Jr. wins, but this is a good fight.
The best
Carlos
part,
Jr. is a big-ass guy for that weight
division. He is, and he's got his nickname is Shoeface, and I'll just never get over that shit. So I have to pick him. Got to pick Shoeface. Fuck it.
And then, okay, prelim main event. That's weird. I don't know why that's the main event of that one. Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Ribas. On the main card, give me Ribas with the win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, she's young. It's, like, it's strawweight, to me, they're not at the point where they need young, you know, like, blood yet, because I think there's still a lot of good matchups in that division. But Ribas sent Paige VanZant to bare-knuckle fighting.
Yeah, she did.
Like, it's one of those, like, oh, okay, statement made.
Yo, but the
and I love the personality. She has a ton of personality. She's marketable. I think this is a good card to put her on.
This is. But here's the thing about Marina Rodriguez. If you look at her record, she's only lost one fight. And it was a controversial split decision loss to Carla Esparza. She had a draw against Randa Markos and Cynthia Calvillo. She's undefeated other than that. I'm still picking Ribas. But I think a lot of people are just completely overlooking. They think it's a showcase for Ribas, and it could end up being that way. But it's not like Marina Rodriguez. It's just she's only lost one fight.
Calvillo's been weird too, though.
Yeah, and that was a draw. Like and this sucks because I cannot remember how that fight played out. I was trying to, and I was like, I didn't feel like looking it up. So I can't remember. I remember we all were disappointed in Calvillo's performance, but I can't remember what happened. Wasn't as bad as her last one, where she was striking and everybody was like, what the fuck are you doing? So, I don't know.
Yeah, nah, nothing. It's hard to be a little worse than the last one. And then we have next fight up, another one where we just expect people to throw hands. Frivola versus Ottman.
Yeah. Yeah. This, somebody's getting knocked out.
I root for Frivola in terms of he seems like a nice guy. Right? Like, he genuinely does. He seems like a cool guy, like a guy who you'd hang out with. Like, he just seems like a dope person. I don't think he's going to win this fight. No. He only has one loss. So, I mean, he beat Luis Pena, Jalen Turner. He's gone the distance a couple of times. I get it. This ain't the fight to try to go the distance with.
No, he's going to get stopped. I'm picking Frivola's going to get stopped. That's really
good. Yeah. Ottman's gonna knock him out. Yeah.
Period.
Ottman has all the hype, all the momentum. I think, you know, this might be a statement knockout. This might be ugly. And then we have Jessica I versus Joanne Calderwood.
What a weird beef they have.
Yeah, I don't even know why the beef started.
She doesn't either. Jessica, if you ask Jessica I, she's like, I don't know.
It's just on site. Yeah. Like, you don't even know why it was started in the beginning. Like, yo, it's on site.
Jessica has no idea why. It's weird because if you've ever interviewed or seen or listened to Joanne Calderwood talk, she talks like she couldn't be a fighter. You're like, there's no way this girl could be a fighter. But she's angry. Like, she's a mad woman. And for whatever reason, according to her, she says Jessica I has disrespected her. And I think it all started with Jessica I was getting interviewed about the division when Jessica I was near the top of the division. And they mentioned Calderwood to her, and she was like, she's got to work on her cardio. And for whatever reason, Calderwood just lost her mind. It was like, fuck her, in her sweet voice, the way Calderwood talked, fuck her. And from that point on, it was on. So now they're going to settle the beef, but it's such a weird beef. It's very one-sided. Jessica I does not seem like she's interested in that beef, but she's interested in putting hands on her. So I'm going to pick Jessica I.
See, I'm going Calderwood. Just because Calderwood seems to do this, win one fight, lose one fight. Win one fight, lose one fight. And she lost her last fight. So it's about that time. Yes, I know Jessica I had a pretty good run, what, 2 years ago?
She fought for a title.
Yeah, she fought for the title 2 years ago, but she also has a loss to Betch Kohea, Sarah McMahon, who we mentioned before. Valentina took her face off with a kick, which is still one of the best knockouts in women's MMA history. And then lost to Cynthia Calvillo, where it's like, yeah, granted, it's a five-round fight, but still, that's not an impressive loss to me anymore. So give me Calderwood to end this beef the right way. We don't even know why the beef is there, but I'm taking Calderwood to win this fight by decision. Co-main events, Dan Hooker versus Michael Chandler.
It's a good fight.
It is a good fight.
Wasn't the fight I was expecting. If you told me who Chandler was going to fight, I would not have picked Dan Hooker.
No, I would have put him in, but, you know, Gaethje, I feel, still fought somewhat recently, but I would have had him fight Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think. But
Dan Hooker is not a bad
opponent
opponent to fight.
Here's the thing, right? I'm just going to tell you. I think Dan Hooker's going to knock him out.
Oh, shit. Well, I'm not surprised. Like, but why?
Well, because Dan Hooker is an incredible striker, right, who gave Dustin Poirier hell in a fight that should have been fight of the year if Weili Zhang and Joanna didn't fight. That was fight of the year. That was one of the best fights I had seen. That fight was absurd with Hooker and Poirier. Michael Chandler is short. Michael Chandler ducks his head down. What does Dan Hooker do a lot? Throw those knees when somebody gets in close quarters.
All the time. Ask Gilbert Burns.
Yes.
Who's about to fight for a title, who ate one.
And that's what Dan Hooker does. And because of that, I think Chandler's going to prepare for that, and Dan Hooker ain't going to hit him with that shit. He's going to fuck him up with something else. And I like Chandler as a fighter, not necessarily as a person. He's been very fucking MAGA and Kanan and a bunch of conspiracy theories on Twitter. But I think that Chandler's a good fighter, but I think the UFC is getting him like at a WCW sting time, where it's like, we got him, and it's like, we're just going to get him fucked up. And yeah, you could have put him in there with Gaethje, but you're going to put him with Dan Hooker. And Dan Hooker's going to beat him, and I think it's going to be a really good fight. I think it probably end up being fight of the night. But I'm picking Dan Hooker.
I'm picking Chandler by decision, which could backfire because a lot of times when these guys come in from a different promotion, they lose their first fight, but then go on a run. So we've seen this several times with Alvarez did the same thing.
Lost Cowboy.
Lost Cowboy, went on a run, ended up champion. So you look at this, we've seen Gaethje lose, go on a run several different times. So it's one of those things where, yeah, Chandler could slip up, but I feel like this one only being a 3-round fight leads to a lot of violence, but I think you can make it the distance. Like you said, Poirier made it 25 minutes, not 15.
Yeah.
Felder made it 25, not 15. Iaquinta made it to the last bell and lost. James Vick, you know, his night ended early. Barbosa made it into third round, beat Hooker. So you look at that, it's like, I think you can make it 15 with him. You're gonna take some shots. You're going to be in for a war for 15 minutes. But I don't think Michael Chandler's ready for that. I am giving Chandler the win. And I really, really want to see him versus Gaethje next. So I want him to win.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. It's just I look at Chandler and I look at he got knocked out by Pitbull. Quick, fast, and hurry in his last loss.
Quick, fast.
And then he beat, like, Benson Henderson. And, you know, he beat Brett Primus, and Primus beat him because Chandler, I believe, like, tore his ACL or something in that fight, if I remember right.
Then he ran it back.
Yeah.
He was whipping his ass with the ACL first.
Yeah. I'm not saying that Bellator has whack competition, but I am saying there's levels to striking. And I don't think Chandler, outside of Pitbull, has fought a striker like Dan Hooker. The other person to beat Michael Chandler, Will Brooks, knocked him out. Will Brooks is no longer in the UFC. Now, I know fighters change. I'm just saying, Dan Hooker's a lot more violent than everybody outside of Pitbull. So this could be a really tough fight for him. I don't know if he can survive. But you may be right. The 3 rounds could make a difference. If it was 5 rounds, I'd definitely pick Hooker. I'm a little leery because I think Chandler's still a great fighter, but I think he's just going to run into something. And I just hate that Chandler like ducks his head down. Them damn knees that Hooker throws are savage.
Yeah, it's going to be a good fight, though. Like you said, it could be only 15 minutes. Could still be fight of the night. And then main event, Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 2. Conor knocks him out within 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Mm. Yeah, and Poirier's fucking tough. Mm. If it goes past two rounds, Poirier's winning.
Absolutely.
Conor knocks him out in 2 minutes.
All right, so I just did a big betting piece on this. There's no value in betting on Conor McGregor. He's almost like a 3-1 favorite, which is absurd.
Wow.
Because if you look at their records over the past, since they last fought, if you just go since they last fought, they both have the same amount of losses. Both of them are lost to the same guy, Khabib. The other loss they have, Conor lost to Nate, and Poirier lost, I believe, which was his last featherweight fight to Michael Johnson. Hasn't lost to anybody outside of Khabib since.
There's an asterisk by that, but I'll let you finish.
Asterisk next to what?
Not losing to anyone else.
Okay.
He got knocked out by Eddie Alvarez, but Alvarez threw a stupid fucking knee that he didn't need to throw, and it got DQ'd, and then he ran it back and beat Alvarez.
But
he was out cold before the knee.
Yeah, but it is what it is. Poirier has a better resume than Conor in the lightweight division.
True.
Poirier knocked out Justin Gaethje. Poirier has beaten 4 former champions. He beat the hell out of Max Holloway. So the odds are ridiculous. The odds are flat out wrong. The odds, it should be a lot closer. So you can't bet on Conor. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm still picking Conor. Because the thing is that you have to survive 2 rounds with Conor. The thing that beats Conor, like, I'm not saying Dustin can knock him out, but if this fight goes past 3 rounds, I don't know what Conor's conditioning is going to be like. I have no clue. And the thing most of all about Conor, he's never got a knockout past 2 rounds. Just hasn't happened.
Yep.
He either knocks you out or it goes to a war of attrition. And if you remember the Nate Diaz fight, the only reason that Nate beat him was because Conor was tired of shit. And then the second fight, Conor had to suck it up. He was tired as hell in the 3rd round. If Poirier can find a way to survive 2 rounds with Conor, he's got a great chance of winning this fight.
Gets interesting. The Holloway fight went 15 minutes, though, and he beat the shit out of Holloway for
15
minutes.
I mean, he pumped.
But that's all different.
Yeah, he pummeled. But again, it's that thing where Dustin's bigger. Max doesn't have power like that. So that volume striking didn't really matter. Because Dustin was just...
Conor walked through.
Yeah. So you look at... therein lies my problem with Dustin. And you made my point before I got a chance to make it. Eddie Alvarez put hands on Dustin Poirier.
Yes, he did.
If Dustin's a fool, the smart thing to do is try to make this as ugly as possible for 2 rounds. Have Conor chase you. Do not engage in a firefight because he will knock you out.
Yep.
If you can find a way to keep your distance and make Conor chase, and not even necessarily make him pay, right? Make it ugly. Try to clinch him along the fence. Try to make this ugly. But if you get in a striking match with Conor, look, Max always says he's the best boxer. But Conor's got a great case for this because that left hand is dynamite. But also, what Conor did to Cerrone is hard to really gauge because Cowboy is kind of washed up. But if you look at that, he knocked him out with a head kick. He threw a jumping knee, which means his awareness, his IQ, is top tier when it comes to finishing. Conor doesn't make a mistake when it's time to finish a fight.
The shoulder was crazy.
Right.
The shoulder strikes.
What Conor does, he's one of the best finishers in MMA. Because if he doesn't knock you out with that left hand, he's going to get you and he's going to be poised while doing so. You look at the Brandao fight. You look at the Dennis Seaver fight. Joseph just ran into one. You look at the Chad Mendes fight. That was surgical. These weren't just like, I'm throwing wild punches at somebody, I'm going to catch you.
Yep.
Poirier's got a pretty good chin, but he did get knocked silly by Eddie Alvarez. Justin Gaethje fought the wrong damn fight.
And that's a 3rd round knockout for Conor, by the way. Chad Mendes.
The 2nd.
Oh, it's only 2nd.
Conor's never had a knockout past 2 rounds.
Huh.
So I'm picking Conor McGregor to stop him in late 1st, early 2nd round. I think Poirier knows, like everything that I'm saying, I think they're game planning for. I think they know they got to get Conor into deep water. But I think it's a lot harder than you think it is. Because Conor's wide stance, pressure fighting, the way that he fights, you think you can strike with him, and then he knocks you out. Imagine, like, Kel, if me and you get in a fight, because you know the clock is there, but I'm standing in front of you and I'm showing you opportunities to hit me, you're a fighter. You're probably going to take it. Dustin's probably going to take a chance. He's going to get caught.
Yep.
So that's why I think he's going to get caught. I don't know if it's going to be the left hand. At some point, it will be the straight left hand that catches him. But I think prior to that, Dustin's going to make a mistake of getting into a firefight and get knocked out. But if somehow he manages to...
think Connor might hit him with a body blow. Just drop his ass.
Could be. If somehow Dustin Poirier is smart, this fight gets very interesting after 15 minutes. Because Connor's takedown defense gets worse. His punches don't have the same amount of steam on him. And he gets sloppy.
Yep.
But I'm picking
Connor. No, I agree. The defense gets sloppy.
I mean, you look at the Floyd fight. And I know it's boxing. But at the same time, you got to look at what... the punches get wider. They're not as powerful. Connor's defense is not as tight. And now you throw takedowns into it. Because Khabib had a much easier time taking down Connor late than early. Yep. Connor's a front runner. That's who he is. But
he's one hell of a front
runner. It's
one hell of a
I'm picking Conor McGregor. Yeah. And at first I wasn't sure, but the more I've thought about this fight, and the more I've watched Conor be super settled, and the more that I think now, and then you can take it from here. The more I think now where I look at Conor, he's not fighting for money anymore. He's got it. I think the desire's there because he fucked around and lost. And he knows it. And he's got to rededicate himself back to the sport. It's really not that hard. He looks in tremendous shape. But I think he's fighting for legacy now.
I think so. And I think Connor knows, even though he'll never admit it, in his head, I think he thinks, like, the one guy who's perfectly made to beat me is gone. And if I rule for the next 3 years, you can't say shit about my legacy.
Absolutely.
So I think this is the first step towards that. And... listen, man, Poirier just gets hit too much for me. You're talking about a smart fight. I haven't seen, not that Poirier is, you know, dumb IQ-wise, but I haven't seen a smart defensive fight out of him.
No.
I haven't. Max hit him. Max just couldn't hurt him.
Exactly.
And then he hurt Max, what, the third round? And Max could never recover. But the first two rounds, Max was piecing his ass up. Gaethje hurt him before he stopped Gaethje. I think Gaethje might have dropped him.
I can't remember.
Dustin recovers and then stops Gaethje. So no. Yeah, nah, like, if this is you catch me first, I catch you first, I'm going with Connor every time. So, yeah, nah, the wrestling I don't think is going to be there to really threaten Connor. Nope.
Nah.
So give me Connor.
Like, Connor would have to make a stupid mistake. Like, Connor would have to make a mistake to get, like, in a clinch. And, you know, Poirier... single leg trip, some shit like that. Corey's a very...
choke his ass out, guillotine.
Yeah, he's a really good grappler, but the fact of the matter is that Dustin gets hit. He's not a great defensive fighter. He's not.
If Poirier wins, I could see it being guillotine or somehow he wrapping Connor's ass up.
Later in the fight. Yep. I don't think... Dude, if Dustin were to stop him early, I would be stunned. I can't see.
Connor could throw that left too hard, fall... Dustin just dodge it, land on his back, and fucking rear naked choke.
I mean, dude.
If you get Connor anywhere on the floor in the position of a submission, Connor's tapping.
It's just, but I think Connor loses to fatigue more than anything else.
I think he panics in general.
But that's due to fatigue. Like, Nate Diaz, he was busting Nate's ass the first, what, two rounds? And then he got tired.
Yeah, dropped him twice in that first
round. I don't think he tapped because he was getting choked out. I think he tapped because he was exhausted.
Yeah, Khabib fight too, I guess.
I mean, the Khabib fight was...
he survived the first couple rounds on the ground. Because
he's explosive. He showed incredible takedown defense. But you're not going to stop him early because Connor is in the fight. Connor has doubts when the fight gets deep. If he doesn't get you out of there by the second round, it's a different fight. You look at the Floyd fight. Again, just watch Connor's face as the fight is wearing on. Because for whatever reason, Connor can't gauge when he's getting tired. He can't figure it out.
No, so he's still throwing everything behind it, and it's counterproductive. Yeah,
and then something, like, you watch the Floyd fight, and as Floyd is, he knows what he's doing. Floyd's like, I'm going to march him down, I'm just going to wear him out, and I'm going to get him tired, I'm going to fuck him up. And the moment that it happens, Connor's still throwing, and Floyd's like, I got you. And then Connor's like, oh shit, he's got me. He doesn't know how to conserve his gas tank. He can't figure it out. No. That last
It's like the video games, when you have the bar, and you got to, like, chill for a second to let your energy bar go back up so you can throw more punches. Connor never lets it chill. It's just you're constantly just throwing and keeping your bar.
Yeah, he does, like, dude, he doesn't. Kavanaugh can't help him do it. It's Connor puts so much into his punches that when that gas tank gets empty, it's not like, all right, let me take a breath and get my, you know, get my shit back. It's over. He's done. And then Connor panics because his body doesn't know how to react, and then his brain's like, we're fucked.
The reason he beat Nate the second time, before, more than anything, are the leg kicks. Because they don't take as much energy as wielding and just throwing haymakers. So he conserved enough energy in rounds one and two while still hitting Nate with everything to weather the storm three and four and then win round five.
Oh, and let's also be clear about something else. Nate's not a big puncher. At all.
No.
Nate's not a big puncher.
He just let Connor exhaust the gas tank, though. Nate's chin was good enough to say, yo, I'm going to just let you pound on me for two rounds, but you're going to have nothing.
Yeah, it's like Nate is a good boxer. He's very Max Holloway-ish in terms of volume, but he's not a big puncher. And if you look at that second fight with Connor, that was very back and forth late in the fight because Nate kept getting up after being knocked down, and Connor was just exhausted. The power on those punches was just not there anymore. There's no more zip. Can Dustin do that? I don't think so. But if he can, the fight gets very interesting. In a weird way, I think Connor actually needs to win a fight that goes past three rounds by knockout.
Yeah,
he got to show me
again,
something.
Again, you're playing with.
Well, I'm not asking him to do it. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not like asking him to do it. Play with fire.
Yeah, I think it's a lot, but that's it. Kind of needs to happen for his legacy, or else he's always going to be known as this. As long as it works, it's great. But then when he loses again. If he loses again, and it happens in the same manner, because that's the only way that he loses, he gets tired, he'll be always known as a front. He'll be like the Zab Judah of MMA. That's a lot.
Oh, that sounds so different.
It only gets that bad if Connor never shows me anything else. Zab remained a front runner his entire career. That was just what happened to Zab. And every fighter figured it out. It was like, oh, shit, just weather the storm for five, six rounds, he's tired.
Yep. Nah, I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Can't wait to recap this fight next week. Thanks you guys for listening to another episode. We'll have our wrestling episode for you on Friday, so make sure you guys check back. Two episodes kind of back-to-back this week. And then, of course, we'll be back on Sunday, probably talking Connor right back at you and recapping this fight and whatever else goes on in the universe. We appreciate you guys as always. Stay safe. Stay Rona-free. You can check us out on social media at Corner Podcast _ on Twitter, at Corner Club for Life on Instagram. You can follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale on all platforms. Shout out to the network, Blue Wire. Shout out to all the sponsors. Check out our other podcast, Wrestling with Stereotypes, on adfreeshows.com. Amazing guests we've been having. We are on a run there, so it is fun. We'll keep pumping out content over there as well. We appreciate you. Until next time, we're out.
Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.